Chapter 6. Don't Call Me Crazy. It's May 12, 2019, Mother's Day. I'm sitting in the back seat of our car next to my four-month-old son as my husband drives us to brunch at my in-law's house. I look out the window, holding my breath with tears slowly rolling down my face. I whisper under my breath so my husband won't hear me. I want to die. I'm suffering and afraid to admit it. For more than a month, I have had daily panic attacks, nightly insomnia, agoraphobia, and severe depression. I've tried every tool in my spiritual toolbox, praying daily on my knees, therapy sessions, meditation, and every herbal sleep aid that is allowed while breastfeeding. I'm desperate for solutions to a problem that I'm not willing to admit is there. When we arrive at my in-law's house, I sit down at the kitchen table with my sister-in-law, Meredith. I burst into tears. My mother-in-law comes over to the table and pats me on the back. "It's okay, honey. All new moms are anxious," she says. I know she's trying to help, and I love her for that, but this anxiety isn't just a new mom thing. For weeks, I have been white-knuckling it through the most difficult time in my life. Months of no sleep. Days filled with tears, breastfeeding, and sheer terror. 1 week later, I head to Manhattan with my family because I have a talk the next day. That night, I don't sleep, not even a minute. I move from the sofa to the bed to the loft and back to the sofa. I toss and turn, counting down the hours. The clock is my worst enemy. Around 6, the morning light shines through the window shades. I lie on my living room floor as tears fill my eyes. I am broken. I roll over, pick up my phone, and send an email to the event coordinator. "I'm so sorry to do this, but I'm really suffering with insomnia and anxiety. I'm not sure what's going on, but I haven't slept the entire night. I've never done this in over 15 years as a speaker, but I need to cancel my talk." I press send. Then the shame and guilt set in. I don't feel relief. I feel like a piece of shit. Then I text my therapist. This is a daily routine. "Sorry to bother you again so early in the morning. I don't know what to do anymore. I haven't slept in weeks and I canceled my talk this morning. Call me when you can." The clock turns 7:30 and my son begins to cry. I go into the bedroom to change his diaper and sit him down to feed. My husband looks at me with sad eyes. He's traumatized by all I've been through and terrified that there is no solution. As I feed my son, I sob and say to my husband, "I canceled the talk. I'm a piece of shit, and I may as well die." As I finish nursing Oliver, my phone rings. It's my therapist. "We need to talk," she says. "Please get Zach on the phone." I put the phone on speaker and we huddle around to hear what she has to say. "Gabby, your tools are no longer working. I believe you are suffering from postpartum depression and anxiety. I am suggesting that you speak to a psychiatrist and get on medication. This is a biochemical condition that you cannot fix on your own." I spent months dreading this diagnosis. But for some reason, the moment she said it out loud, I felt relief. I took a breath of acceptance. Sometimes intervention is the only way for us to truly accept what's really going on. When I saw a postpartum psychiatrist, she diagnosed me on the spot and put me on a medicated path. Medication was new for me. I was brought up homeopathic. I had never had a prescription filled in my life. But when I walked out of the doctor's office with the prescription in my hand, I felt immediate relief. I got in a cab and headed right to the pharmacy to pick up my medication. Zach met me. We stood there holding hands with hope in our eyes. When we went to dinner that night, I was the happiest I'd been in months. I hadn't yet even taken one pill, but just knowing they were there was enough to make me smile. Later that week, I checked in with my friends, acupuncturists, and healers who had been helping me. I admitted to them how severe my condition was and shared my diagnosis. "I'm going on an antidepressant. Don't worry, it's a super low dose. Hopefully I can get off of it soon." I found myself justifying it because I felt so ashamed that I couldn't fix this with my spiritual practices or holistic lifestyle. Then I shamed myself for not being over the shame. The most important thing my psychiatrist said was, "Gabby, you've done a lot of trauma healing, spiritual practices, and therapeutic work. Now, with medication, you will feel safer, which will allow you to go even deeper with your therapy. This will be a blessing for you." I held on to her words. I made the commitment to use the medication as a tool to help me fearlessly go deeper into the therapeutic work. I wasn't going to just take a pill and numb out. I was going to go deep and use my new baseline of safety to transform the memories that I'd been so frightened to face. Accepting my diagnosis. The following week, I had to lead a workshop for hundreds of people at a spiritual center in Massachusetts. Two of my best friends, Robin and Jamie, came along. I told them that I needed a babysitter. For myself. I was 1 week into my psychopharmacology path, but not yet sleeping. It often takes months to get the right therapeutic dose of the medication. I needed support from friends I could trust and rely on in case I had insomnia or a panic attack. The first night of the retreat, I excused myself around 9 p.m. to bathe and try to wind down for bed. I clung tightly to a stuffed monkey that I'd taken from my son's nursery that had become my security at night. As the minutes rolled by, I felt the surge of anxiety spike in my chest. Finally, I grabbed Monkey and ran across the hall to Robin and Jamie's room. "Robin, you take my room and I'll sleep in here with Jamie. I need to feel safe." Robin happily moved across to my room. I spent 30 minutes tossing and turning in Jamie's room before I grabbed Monkey and walked back to my room to get in bed with Robin. Then I grabbed Monkey one more time and headed back to Jamie's room again. I looked at my friends with terror in my eyes and said, "Please don't call me crazy." Robin smiled and said, "You're not crazy, but Monkey didn't sign up for this." We all laughed in the midst of the chaos. I only slept 1 hour that night. I couldn't put on a happy face and pretend I was okay the next day. The only way to get through the full-day workshop was to tell the truth. I got on the stage that morning, and my eyes welled up with tears. I told an audience of strangers that I was suffering from postpartum anxiety and depression, that I was newly diagnosed and on medication. I talked about my insomnia and how I hadn't slept the night before. I even cracked a joke about Monkey. The audience extended love and positive energy my way. I felt held and comforted by these compassionate souls. Telling the truth required a lot of self-compassion. What I experienced that day was a reminder that compassion is the antidote to shame. A few months later, I was at the right dose of the antidepressant. The panic had subsided, the insomnia was under control, and I was out of the depression. With my new baseline of safety, I was ready to continue facing the truth of the abuse, the shame of neglect, the impermissible rage, and the terror that lived in my body. I became a student of transformational trauma healing therapies. My doctor was right. The medication gave me a new baseline of safety that would allow me to go even deeper with the therapeutic work. I went far with EMDR therapy, which gave me the ability to recover new memories while safely resolving them. Through the practice of EFT, I was able to regulate my nervous system on my own, which helped me establish a new level of resilience. I will describe both of these therapeutic modalities in great detail shortly. I came to understand that the abuse and neglect from my childhood had shrunk my window of tolerance. My nervous system's ability to ebb and flow in and out of big emotions without getting emotionally flooded. Window of tolerance is a term coined by Dr. Daniel Siegel. More on Siegel's work later in the book. With an optimal window of tolerance, we're able to regulate our nervous system naturally. Even in moments when we're extremely upset or distraught, our nervous system can get activated and then naturally settle. When a person has experienced chronic trauma or insecure attachment, the window of tolerance shrinks, and the individual has less ability to ebb and flow out of emotional states, becoming overwhelmed and triggered more easily. The medication and deeper therapy, particularly EMDR, helped me expand my window of tolerance. For the first time in my life, I was starting to feel safe. In that place of safety, my constant state of sympathetic arousal was transformed to a parasympathetic state in which my nervous system relaxed. The stigmas that hold us back. Even though I'd begun to feel relief on the medication, I still held on to the shame about it. I felt ashamed to share my postpartum experience with other moms because deep down, I felt like a failure. Everyone says having a baby is the best time of your life. For me, it was the scariest. I felt ashamed when I spoke about the medication with my spiritual friends because I hadn't been able to heal myself through spiritual practices or natural remedies. Some of my contemporaries and fellow authors have stood on stages and written books denouncing antidepressants. This made me think that medication was off limits, especially for a spiritual teacher. What I was most ashamed of, though, was that for over a decade as a teacher, I too was unwittingly contributing to the stigma. I stood on stages and responded to questions about mental illness in ways that no longer resonated. In a kind and compassionate way, I'd say things like, "Here's a breath practice for anxiety," or "Meditate more and your depression will lift." While I believe wholeheartedly that meditation is a solution, what I didn't realize was that these comments were potentially unhelpful to anyone suffering with severe mental health issues. I didn't understand how trauma affects the brain, or what it was like to have a biochemical condition that required medicated support. Years before my own diagnosis, I'd asked two women on my team to write a blog for my website about their anxiety journeys. One of the women included a paragraph about how antidepressants saved her life. After reading it, I felt concerned that it would bring up a debate about medication on the blog, so I asked her to remove it, making the case for keeping a potential controversy out of the blog. At the time, I felt justified, but little did I know that I was shaming a team member I cared for and contributing to the stigma. Thankfully, years later, I was able to make amends. On the exact day that I picked up my own medication from the pharmacy, I called her to apologize. I told her about what had been going on with me and the relief I felt to be on a medicated path. Luckily, I found a supportive voice on the other side of that call. A loaded topic. This is not a PSA for antidepressants, but it's also not a topic to ignore. We live in a culture, especially in America, where drugs are highly overprescribed. I understand the side effects inherent in antidepressants and other psychopharmaceutical medications, but many people who've experienced unresolved trauma, depression, postpartum depression, severe anxiety, bipolar disorder, or any other form of anxiety depression know what a miracle medication can be. In certain cases, it saves lives. Medication, when prescribed as part of a larger program of recovery and therapy, really can help you get to a safe baseline where you can start to do deeper work. Take your mental health seriously and consciously make decisions based on educated psychiatric guidance. With a proper diagnosis from a qualified physician, trust that you are being guided on a healing path. Do your research and don't rush to get medicated without thoughtful communication with your psychiatrist. If you're a mother struggling with postpartum depression or someone concerned about a possible mental illness, visit deargabby.com/happy resources for guidance. I share my medication story to take away the stigma. If you had a heart condition, you wouldn't flinch before taking prescribed blood thinners. When you're suffering from an acute mental illness, it's important to seek psychiatric guidance and get support. But it's a starting point, not the destination. Keep going. The deeper healing happens in therapy, spiritual practice, and your own commitment to reprogramming your emotional and psychological state. Therapeutic healing is what's required for true freedom, and it's the key to regulating, reprogramming your brain, and retraining your nervous system. From a spiritual perspective, God is in all healing devices, whether it be medication, a doctor, or a therapist. When we are in the pursuit of freedom and are willing to do whatever it takes to get better, we will always be guided to the exact healing methods we need. Seeing the medication in this way, recognizing it as part of God's plan, helped me release the shame and embrace every part of my healing journey. When I understood what happened to my brain in childhood as an addict and post-pregnancy, I had far more acceptance of myself, my experiences, and my inability to be present. I could see clearly how my brain's inability to take in information, focus, and keep me feeling safe was not my fault. I could see how the programming from my childhood had affected my neural pathways, and therefore, my life. When I began to understand how deprived of serotonin my brain had been because of chronic hypervigilance, I accepted the help of antidepressants for serotonin support. I no longer thought of myself as crazy. Instead, I could lovingly accept my underdeveloped brain function and welcome the fact that I was spiritually guided in all ways, including the medicated path. Rewiring the brain. Thankfully, the brain's neural pathways and synaptic connections have the ability to change and reorganize. This is known as neuroplasticity. Through the therapeutic methods and mindfulness practices, I could rewire my brain. I started noticing that my brain was changing when I was 2 years postpartum. By that point, I had fully recovered from the postpartum depression and anxiety. I had spent over a year supported by medication, which helped me establish a new baseline of safety and restored my brain's reserves. Most important, I had dived into therapeutic practices for rewiring my brain. My amygdala's alarm response no longer reacted to situations that previously would have triggered me. Instead, I was able to witness my frustration or discomfort, be compassionate toward myself, and lovingly guide myself back to peace. In addition, I felt safer in my body, which made me feel more secure in every area of my life. My brain functioned differently, so much so that I became interested in using my mind in ways I'd never imagined. For instance, the research it took to write this book wouldn't have been possible previously. The fact that I looked forward to reading trauma books and attending training courses were testaments to my brain's new capacity to take in information. Witnessing my resilience and my ability to heal helped me speak up about the stigmas that had kept me from getting the support I needed. My hope is that a deeper understanding of your past, what it does to your brain, and how it affects your behavior will help you see yourself and your circumstances, no matter how dire they may be, with compassion and love. My spiritual practice became stronger too. The more at ease I became in my day-to-day life, the more I could access a direct connection to the spiritual realm. I could hear the internal dialogue of spirit more clearly because I was no longer moving so fast in such a heightened state of fear. In stillness, we receive the universal guidance of love as a clear direction. The more grounded I became, the more connected I felt. Spirit was always with me throughout my life, but now I felt the presence of love become more integrated. This deeper spiritual connection allowed me to show up at my highest capacity as a teacher, wife, friend, and mother. A safe way to reprocess your past. With spirit by my side, I felt safe to go even further on my healing path with the support of eye movement desensitization and reprocessing. This transformational therapy uses bilateral stimulation for trauma, which engages the subconscious brain in healing and processing strong emotions. When practicing EMDR, you don't have to figure out why you're having a reaction, physical symptom, or behavioral pattern. Instead, through the support of a therapist and bilateral stimulation accomplished with certain hand movement, audible headphone buzzers, or left-to-right eye movement, you can access and process traumatic memories and other adverse experiences and bring them to an adaptive resolution. Typically, a therapist starts an EMDR session by asking you to think of an image related to a specific memory, as well as any associated negative beliefs, emotions, and body sensations. When applying EMDR to a minor disturbance or type of phobia, a non-traumatic event, one can often feel relief within 8 sessions. When working with trauma, additional sessions are usually required, but some relief can happen much more quickly. That was the case for me. I felt immediate relief with EMDR, and I continue to practice it to this day. EMDR helped me to safely unlock the fragmented memories and set my unconscious mind free from the trauma. The first experience I had with EMDR was just 5 months into my trauma therapy. I was scheduled to fly to Los Angeles for a very important work event. There was no way I wanted to miss it, but at the moment I couldn't contemplate how I'd even get in the car to the airport. I called my therapist for help. "Meet me at the office at 7 a.m. tomorrow. We will do an EMDR session and it will help you get on the plane." We had been talking about EMDR therapy for a few weeks. Early that next morning, my therapist handed me buzzers to hold in each hand and began asking me a series of questions. She was helping me identify the target for the session. She explained that the target didn't need to be about the trauma. It could simply be about whatever I was struggling with that day. My target was clear. I was afraid to get on the plane. I turned on the buzzers and surrendered to her guidance. She followed my responses and asked leading questions that would help me connect to my feelings. As the time went on, my body began to shake as if I was discharging energy from my body. She told me that this was normal and not to be alarmed. I went with it and allowed my body to move in whatever way was necessary to clear the stagnant energy. Before I knew it, the session was complete. I turned off the buzzers and opened my eyes. The room was brighter, and I felt relieved. "Do you feel safe to get on the airplane tonight?" she asked. "Yes, I'm ready." I walked out of her office and fearlessly got into the elevator. I'd been afraid to take the elevator for months. Then I walked out onto Fifth Avenue with a sense of safety greater than I'd felt since remembering the trauma. I got on the plane that night. The relief I experienced from this profound psychiatric healing approach made me want more of it. What I love most about EMDR is how spiritual it is. As the universe would have it, I was guided to an EMDR specialist who helped me go even further in the process. Her ability to intuitively guide me to explore unresolved memories and emotions was a spiritual process. It was as if she was attuning with my energy to allow spirit to work through her to guide me. I've always believed that spirit works through people, particularly therapists, doctors, and healers. And in this case, I felt truly guided by a force of love working effortlessly through this woman. Often, I would see sparks of light flash behind her chair. This was a common experience for me in therapy sessions. Those sparks of light are angels and spirit guides, peeking through to let me know that I am in the presence of a healer. Whenever I'd see a spark of light, I'd know spirit was working through my therapist to help me heal. EMDR is one of the most powerful tools for feeling relief fast. If you feel called to look more into EMDR, take your time choosing a therapist to work with. Make sure you feel safe with them and that you sense their ability to connect to you energetically, not just through your words. To work with an EMDR practitioner, visit DearGabby.com/happyresources. Self-regulation techniques you can do on your own. If you cannot receive EMDR support, or even if you can, I highly recommend exploring emotional freedom techniques, also known as tapping. EFT is a psychological acupressure technique that supports emotional health. It's a valuable self-regulating technique for PTSD, anxiety, or other forms of mental instability. And it's something you can do at home by yourself. Much like EMDR, EFT is a spiritual and psychological practice. At times, it can even feel meditative, and it works on the subconscious level to allow you to feel great relief without emotional discomfort. It doesn't require effort, only willingness. When you practice EFT on your own or with a practitioner, you can always trust that there is spiritual guidance by your side. How EFT works. The goal of EFT is to balance disturbances in your energy field. More than 5,000 years ago, the Chinese identified a series of energy circuits that run through the body, which they called meridians. This concept forms the basis of acupuncture and acupressure healing modalities. EFT combines the cognitive benefits of therapy with the physical benefits of acupuncture to restore your energy and heal your emotions. Unlike acupuncture, EFT doesn't use needles. Instead, you stimulate certain meridian points on the upper body by tapping on them with your fingertips. They are the eyebrow point, side of the eye, under the nose, chin, collarbone, under the arm, and top of the head. When you tap on specific energy meridians found on your face, head, arm, and chest, you can change neural pathways and clear out the emotional disturbances behind addictive habits, phobias, triggered reactivity, and more. Tapping can help release old fears, limiting beliefs, negative patterns, and even physical pain. While you tap, you talk out loud about the issue you are working to heal. Allowing yourself to emote while simultaneously tapping on the energy points sends a signal to the brain that it's safe to relax. Our fear response, controlled by the amygdala, then lowers. I have found that tapping on anxiety can be one of the most profound ways to regulate my nervous system and get back to a safe baseline. You start with what's called the most pressing issue, or MPI. Next, rate your pre-tapping MPI on a scale of 0 to 10, 10 being the most distressing. This number gives you a point to refer back to after your session and helps determine its effectiveness. Then you start tapping, beginning with negative rounds and moving on to positive rounds. You talk as you tap on the different meridian points. You'll see how EFT works and get the hang of it quickly with the following EFT script on shame. If you want to follow along with me on video, go to the resources page at deargabby.com/happyresources, where I've also included a video on tapping for shame and another for tapping on anxiety. This process will give you relief and lower your anxiety. But it's important to note that tapping can sometimes activate you. If at any point you feel overwhelmed by the tapping, continue to tap but let go of the script and instead repeat these words. I am safe. I am safe. While you tap. If the idea of facing your shame or even giving voice to it feels too overwhelming, please skip this practice for now. Tapping for shame. For this tapping exercise, let's start by using the following pressing issue. I feel ashamed of my past. My hope is that this practice will help you feel safer in your body and more accepting of your story. And while this might not be your most pressing issue, it will give you a chance to learn the practice. At that point, you can go back and amend the statement. If you're driving, please resume this practice when you are home. Round 1. Rate your MPI from a scale of 0 to 10. We start the tapping process by tapping on the side of the hand, or the karate chop point. I will prompt you to tap on specific energy meridians, and while tapping, repeat the words after me. Side of the hand. Even though I feel so ashamed of my past, I deeply and completely love and accept myself. Side of the hand. Even though I feel so ashamed of my past, I deeply and completely love and accept myself. Side of the hand. Even though I feel so ashamed of my past, I deeply and completely love and accept myself. Tap on your eyebrow and repeat after me. I'm so ashamed of my past. Tap on the side of the eye and repeat after me. I don't want to accept myself. Tap under the eye. And repeat after me. I don't want to look at the past. Tap under the nose and repeat after me. What will I do? How will I handle that? Tap on the chin and repeat after me. It's all up to me and I'm feeling overwhelmed. Tap on the collarbone and repeat after me. I wish I could calm down. Tap on the underarm and repeat after me. I'm so ashamed of my past. Tap on the top of the head and repeat after me. I want to push this away because I can't stand the thought of facing it. Take a deep breath and rate your most pressing issue now. Round two. Continue tapping and repeat after me. Side of the hand. Even though I'm so ashamed of my past, I deeply and completely love and accept myself. Side of the hand. Even though I'm so ashamed of my past, I deeply and completely love and accept myself. Tapping on the side of the hand. Even though I'm so ashamed of my past, I deeply and completely love and accept myself. Tapping on the eyebrow point. It's scary to face this shame. Tap on the side of the eye. But I've got through scary things before. Tap under the eye. I know speaking my truth offers me freedom. Tap under the nose. Maybe I just need to take a break and vent. Chin. Maybe I can get relief from this tapping session that I'm doing now. Collarbone. I do know I'm not alone in my suffering. Under the arm. I know I can calm down eventually, and I welcome that shift. Top of the head. I honor my experience and accept myself and my situation completely. Take a deep breath and rate your most pressing issue. Round three. Continue tapping and repeat after me. Side of the hand. Even though I'm ashamed of my past, I choose to be calm, confident, and relaxed. Side of the hand. Even though I'm ashamed of my past, I choose to be calm, confident, and relaxed. Side of the hand. Even though I'm ashamed of my past, I choose to be calm, confident, and relaxed. Eyebrow. Calm, confident, and relaxed. Side of the eye. I choose to know that I am not alone. Under the eye. I choose to be accepting of myself, my past, and my present. Under the nose, I choose to be calm, confident, and relaxed. Chin. Calming down now, relaxing my body. Collarbone. It feels good to take a break and feel calm. Under the arm. I am compassionate toward myself. Top of the head. I accept myself and my situation completely, and I love myself. I'm safe. Take a deep breath and rate your most pressing issue. Notice how you feel and honor the shifts that occur. When you're done tapping, rate your most pressing issue on a scale of 0 to 10. Has it decreased? Typically, when we practice EFT, your MPI can be lowered significantly in just one session. When it comes to deeper topics like shame, there is the possibility that you'll stay at a high number or even go up. If that happened to you, please practice any one of the grounding tools from Chapter 5 to calm your energy. Speak your truth. A powerful way to shift the shame from the past is to speak your truth in the present. Giving your experiences a voice can be extremely liberating. One of the reasons why Alcoholics Anonymous is so successful in helping people with addiction is because it's a safe place to speak your truth. And, importantly, to recognize your truth in another human. The more we speak up about our suffering, the more we contribute to ending the stigma and shifting the shame. We can no longer suffer in silence. Giving voice to your mental illness, depression, addiction, anxiety, trauma, abuse, or anything that caused you harm can feel terrifying. I understand. But I want you to consider that it's far more terrifying to live in hiding or suffer in silence. The metaphysical text A Course in Miracles says, "And yet it is only the hidden that can terrify, not for what it is, but for its hiddenness." Hiding your truth is like living in your own self-inflicted prison. Speaking truth sets you free. To be clear, I'm not recommending you speak up about something before it's too soon, but I am suggesting that you write about it for yourself. The practice of accepting yourself fully through the written word can be a first step to speaking your truth. Take a moment, maybe after tapping, to write freely about your experience. Admit your truth on the page. This could be the first time you even admit it to yourself. Remember, it took me months to admit that I was suffering from a biochemical condition and get the help I needed. Had I read a chapter like this and given myself permission to accept my suffering, I might have gotten help much faster. Fearlessly acknowledging your suffering is a form of prayer. Consciously or unconsciously, you're asking for a miracle. You're inviting the presence of spirit to take the wheel and show you what to do. You must admit your truth to yourself before you can speak about it. Give yourself full permission to write freely about what you feel, what you need, and what you've been through. Don't be afraid to use words like addiction, abuse, mental illness. Take away the stigma for yourself. You are not alone. The healthier I've become, the more comfortable I am talking about my trauma and addiction recovery, my medicated path, and my postpartum experience. The more I heal, the less shame I have around these topics. I believe that my willingness to speak about these topics has allowed other people to release their own shame. When you hear someone tell your story, you no longer feel alone. When you witness someone bravely give voice to their truth, your shame can dissolve. You can recognize yourself in the other and no longer feel so alone. I've felt that connection to people all throughout my healing journey. In 12-step rooms, I'd be surrounded by people whose lives were drastically different from mine, but inside we were the same. Seeing your sameness in my story or in the stories of others will greatly benefit your healing path. My commitment to shifting the shame around these topics led me to dedicate an episode of my podcast, Dear Gabby, to stopping the stigma and shifting the shame around mental health and trauma. You can listen to the episode at the resources link, deargabby.com/happyresources. My intention for that episode was to help you recognize that you're not alone in any of the experiences that have left you with shameful feelings or emotional distress. Suffering is a universal experience, but we often think we're alone in it. Knowing you're not alone in your experiences can help you stop suffering in silence so you can honor your truth. I want you to give voice to the unspoken shame that the world has told you not to face. The first step to shifting shame is to give voice to it, to speak on behalf of it, to honor and hold people in their experience of mental illness. If we don't speak on behalf of it, then we will stay silent. We will stay stuck. We will stay frozen in time. My new baseline. It's been 3 years since my postpartum diagnosis, and I've never felt more at peace. In retrospect, I can honor that terrifying experience of my childhood as a catalyst for my greatest growth. I was able to establish a new baseline of safety through understanding my neurobiology and accepting psychiatric support. I finally felt safe enough to take my recovery to the next level to reprocess the memories and triggers that had kept me stuck in reactive patterns. I could undo my reactivity and face my triggers with more grace and resources. Most of all, I was able to dismantle the wall of shame and fear that had held me back from peace. If you're struggling right now with chronic pain, addiction, anxiety, or mental illness of any kind, please know that by following this guidance, you too can look back one day and see it as a great gift. When we face our discomfort with faith instead of fear, we can grow in profound ways. It's faith that got me out of the darkness, and it's faith that keeps me in the light.